Right now it is time for the Berkshire Edge on air. That's right, the Berkshire Edge is online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, theberkshireedge.com, bringing you news and information from the South County area and surrounding areas. And we welcome in right now Marcy and David. Good morning. Thanks,
good
guys.
Good morning. Good morning.
Well, Marshall, I don't know. I mean, I was enjoying listening to Dylan.
I know. I'm
probably more interesting than we are.
I'm no match for Dylan or Arlo Guthrie.
Nor are we, yeah.
It's nice to dig back and find those songs because they really, on different levels, were both incredible singer-songwriters that had an impact on the country and the world, both of them. So,
both of them.
Oh, yeah. But speaking of singers, you know, we had a story on, I guess it was Sunday, that the Tanglewood had announced the, the singer who, having a senior moment, who's the singer who's at Tanglewood?
I'm not sure what you're referring to.
James Taylor.
Oh, James Taylor.
You know, it was a special announcement by Tanglewood that the James Taylor tickets went on sale this past Monday. And I'm sure, you know, they're probably almost sold out already.
Oh, I'm sure they were gone by Tuesday night. I'm sure they
It's amazing. I mean, you know, he's announced two concerts at Tanglewood this summer, and I'm sure they're gone. And they were for sale, actually, at his website. And then they'll be at the Tanglewood website, if there are any left, sometime in the future. But it's amazing how year after year he draws in a huge crowd.
That's because he's a Williams College graduate.
And he lives here.
But
anyway,
he lives by the songs he sings as well. He's not a fake.
That's right.
That's the plain simple truth. I mean, you look at people like him, like Arlo, and like Dylan. They live what they write. They are what they are.
They write their own songs.
Yeah.
Well, they write what they have lived too.
Yeah.
Yes. Right.
Amazing.
And actually, I was looking at his bio on Wikipedia the other day just for some other reason, and he's lived quite a life.
Oh, yeah.
you know, it hasn't been easy, although, you know, his voice is so smooth, but it doesn't reflect an easy life.
No, not
at all. So he has lots of material to write his song.
All right, we will move on to the stories, and I'm so glad to see a good news story that benefits the whole region to lead off with, and that is Bill Tingley has led this charge for many, many years. The Housatonic River has now received the federal designation as a wild and scenic river. It protects the river. It also opens up funding opportunities for different things that they want to do to protect the river. It really is a big designation. They've worked hard on this.
It is a very big designation. But, you know, I think, as I read this, that the only part of the river that has been designated is in Connecticut. You know, the announcement said that the designation was for 41 miles of the Housatonic River from the Massachusetts border to the Boardman Bridge in New Milford, Connecticut. So I think, I mean, you know, Bill Tingley and the Housatonic River Commission and various towns in Connecticut are the ones that have pulled this through, but I don't know that this, I think this designation does not apply to the Housatonic River in Massachusetts.
What I'd like to know is, what is the river then in Massachusetts?
Right.
It's docile and it's ugly.
I would think if towns in Massachusetts now want to follow their application process
they will
because it will protect that natural resource, which for many years was unprotected, as we all know, following the PCBs and everything.
Well, you know, GE, the fact is that for so many years, the use of the river as a kind of sewer for industry is not just a GE in Pittsfield problem, but it was the way the river was treated all along its course.
Well, all rivers, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the Cuyahoga River. Was it in Cincinnati or Columbus?
Cuyahoga River is near where I grew up.
Well, there was
in Cleveland.
Cincinnati
it caught fire. No. It was in Cleveland. It caught fire.
Right. I mean, because it was used as a sewer.
The oil refineries used it.
Well, I think every state has that. The Naugatuck River in Connecticut in the 50s and early 60s, U.S. rubber was dumping solid rubber waste into the river, where the river was actually, from that point on, black. And they finally prevented them from doing that and the cleanup. And now that is a pristine river. Some 50 years, 50 to 60 years later, the river has recovered. But
I think
just about every decent river in this country was abused by exactly what we're talking about.
Industry,
different companies just getting rid of their waste the easiest way possible.
Yep.
So this I think
that would make it a really interesting long story or book, even.
A tour of the river,
and remembering how the progress we've made and keep restoring these rivers to some nearer their original natural state, you know?
Yeah, but not enough.
Because
there's still PCBs in the Housatonic in Massachusetts, and I'm sure they're running down into Connecticut.
Absolutely.
But anyway, and, you know, and he's thanking, you know, these towns in Connecticut, really, and I guess it's the seven towns that were represented on this commission, which are Canaan, including Falls Village, Cornwall, Kent, Salisbury, Sharon, New Milford, and North Canaan, and also the Housatonic Valley Association. But they also are thanking only, you know, Senator Chris Murphy and Representative Johanna Hayes. So these are Connecticut legislators. So.
Yes.
It's not Massachusetts. It's the Connecticut portion.
Well, hopefully,
hopefully it will
lead on to Massachusetts.
I mean, you know, you can't have a portion in the middle of the river designated wild and scenic, and the parts above and below it can still consider dumps.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, you know, Pittsfield, you've got a story about Pittsfield here, and I like the way you start the story off true to its progressive credentials. You know, Pittsfield has done a lot of things over the year that have gained national attention from their parades and everything like that. But it really is. I lived in Pittsfield for 1 year of my life, and it was a fun city to live in at the time. It was back in 1971. But Pittsfield hosted a demonstration commemorating the 50th anniversary of Roe versus Wade.
Right. And our reporter was there.
Yes. Pittsfield has had a real liberal political core, you might say. And the Berkshire Democratic Brigades are the latest iteration of that, but in any ways, they organized a big demonstration, a celebration.
And they had about 80 people there, to commemorate. I can't say celebrate, but to commemorate the Supreme Court's original decision of Roe v. Wade on January 22nd.
Well, that was 24th, 2022.
Yeah, the demonstration was on the 22nd, but I do remember that day. I was on a bus, and suddenly I read the New York Times. It was amazing. It was a cold day, and there were a lot of people there, and who knows what's going to happen with this? But at any rate, in Massachusetts, where we vote blue, there was a big demonstration.
Well, who knows what's going to happen? And maybe in the future, those people can celebrate the reinstatement of Roe versus Wade or something different in its place. So,
well, we hope so.
In the future,
there was actually a very interesting article in the New York Times yesterday. Two doctors who perform abortions publicized what fetal tissue looks like when you after an abortion at 6 or 7 weeks. I think they showed, and it's nothing. I mean, it's there's nothing there, and people have been shocked. Because they have been taught that from the moment of conception you see a fully formed fetus. And actually what you see is a very small little aggregation of cells that... So I think there is a campaign to debunk a lot of the propaganda that the supposedly pro-life people have been disseminating over the last 50 years. So.
All right. Let's move on to the Berkshire economy. Yeah. One Berkshire introduced a high note of the east-west passenger rail service through Pittsfield.
Well, actually, we have, this is part of our business section. We had our Monday business section. We had a kind of thorough review of the Berkshire economy over the last, in 2022, written for us by One Berkshire, which is an economic development organization based in Pittsfield. And they talked a lot about, that tourism was back in the Berkshires, that it had been a very profitable year. I mean, that there were throngs of tourists, all of the the institutions of the creative economy were alive and well in 2022. But one of the highlights is that we now have east-west trains.
Restored,
right? Which is extremely promising.
Well, there are two. This has been a battle. I'm a rail fan, so I've been following this closely. What we have is the east-west main rail line from Boston to Albany offers passenger service, and at Albany you can it can connect to a route that goes south to New York City
as well as east to Boston.
As west to Buffalo. So this is a kind of roundabout way. You go west in order to go south, but the way the trains long ago used to go was just directly south from Pittsfield through Great Lenox, Great Barrington, and Connecticut, and it would connect to the rail lines going along the shore and in New York City, and that's the way people used to be able to take the train to
But now
New York
we
City.
Can't.
Yeah, the trains used to go to Danbury, and then from Danbury, go to Point South and into New York City. Exactly right.
That's
and that's what
In fact, I can remember doing that, actually.
And we would sure like that to happen again. I mean, right now, we all have to go to Metro North, which is, a schlep for everybody, and, even in Connecticut and farther for us because we're farther north of Wassaic, which is the last stop. So, there is a movement, there's a train campaign to try to get, a train that goes north-south as well as east-west. I mean, we have had trains restored, and that's what David was talking about originally. There has been a restoration this year of trains east and west to the Berkshires. Originally, the Massachusetts legislature, in its its blindness, thought that a sufficient east-west train went from Boston to Springfield. They forgot that we're here.
Well, from Boston, they can't
they
see beyond
see
the mountains.
Right.
They see those mountains out there, and there's nothing beyond them.
Right. they don't know that that the Berkshires are here.
Well, what's
so
interesting?
So we have had, luckily, we now have trains that go from Boston to the Berkshires. But now what we want is a train that goes from the Berkshires through Connecticut to New York. And Massachusetts has set aside the money. I mean, Governor Deval Patrick, years ago, set aside the money for this, but Connecticut won't contribute to it, which is why it's stalled.
Well, Connecticut was in a severe financial crunch.
Yes,
they're not in that right now. But also what happened here, there's a railroad company that has been running the line. And to be quite honest with you, they have done very bad public relations with the public here. So there's plenty of people that are wary of that. But I think that sooner or later, it's only a natural extension of actually better use of the economy and fuel, that sooner or later that rail line will open up once again and go to Danbury. I don't think there's any doubt about it. It's just a question of how long it's going to take to get it done.
Right.
Boy, I sure hope so.
It's if you look into the future, it takes traffic off the road, it takes cars and trucks off the road, it does a lot of things that are positive, so I think sooner or later it'll happen.
For our town, yeah.
Absolutely, economy wise, there's no doubt about that.
And I assume it would also be good for Connecticut. To have a good train line that goes to New York from Danbury.
It would. So we'll see. That's why I said we'll see what happens.
Right. Yeah, right.
All
we'll
right.
see.
Yeah.
I mean, I just hope it's within my lifetime. I'd like to see it.
You'd like to take it.
I'd like to take it, right.
All right. Well, I like to see if this was a radio show this next time. Dateline Stockbridge. I could hear it now. Dateline Stockbridge. Carol Owens has.
Yes, this is a new column. She does a weekly column called Connections.
For us.
But now she has introduced a second column, which is a once a month Dateline Stockbridge, and it's really. More focused, I think, on issues of governance and democracy than it is the history. That Connections is more about history, and they're always very interesting, but this is more current.
Well, Carol has a library of newspaper clips and information going back to the history of Stockbridge. And she writes a weekly column that summons some of these old stories about Stockbridge for her column.
For her Connections column.
For her Connections column. And now she is bringing it into the present. she has done to Stockbridge, it's a really interesting use of her historical library to summon up the history of Stockbridge and of this little town in the Berkshires, and it oddly all the stories seem weirdly current. You know, the same issues, just different persons are involved in them, so it's very, very interesting for history.
And, you know, and now what she's doing is she's talking about what's going on in Stockbridge now. I mean, you know, what's being discussed at the Stockbridge Select Board, but she can't help herself. I mean, that, you know, this in Dateline Stockbridge, I mean, she introduces it and says that, you know, Stockbridge is older than the United States of America, that Puritans and Pilgrims arrived here in, you know, into Massachusetts in 1620, and by the early 1700s, Stockbridge was already a thriving little town, and she's saying, you know, that even though this is supposed to be a current column, she's still looking at what's going on at the Stockbridge, you know, the contemporary Stockbridge Select Board, but she's seeing it through a historical lens, and it's So it's very interesting. And it's nice for us to have more news about Stockbridge because it's a very lively and interesting town.
She sees, all these current issues through the historical lens.
Right.
And that's very interesting. You might say the more things change, the more they remain the same.
Yeah. Or if you can't live the learn from the past, you're
right.
Destined to repeat it.
What is it? It's George Santayana, those who don't know history are destined to repeat it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, let's go on to what's in a name. This is somewhat funny, but it's not really funny.
Okay, this is our ongoing stumbling block of the merger of the schools.
Yeah, the school districts.
The stumbling block would be the naming of the district. That's the first thing. Come on.
I know it sounds silly, but people are loyal to their. We have in southern Berkshire County two neighboring school districts, and as the population of the Berkshires, the younger population of the Berkshires has decreased, it makes sense perhaps to have merged school districts rather than the two that once was sufficient for the number of students that were here. So this debate about where and what the name of the merged school district would be has consumed the towns in South Berkshire for many years. That's what this story is.
So there is,
And it all comes down to what they want to name it.
How about Berkshire Combined School District?
Right. Or unified.
That's it. That would be funny. UFB, Unified Friends of the Berkshire School District.
Right.
But this debate has the school districts in southern Berkshire are very competitive, and the towns just do not want to give up their local schools. But it's been happening. I mean, there are school buildings such as the old school, elementary school in Housatonic, for example, which is they finally abandoned that as an operating school building, and there are other schools, former schools, scattered around southern Berkshire, illustrating that at one time, the elementary schools and high schools were more located in neighborhoods rather than in the consolidated facilities that we now have, which reflect the fact that there are fewer students than there used to be because of younger population
decline. Because we don't have the kinds of manufacturing jobs that
supported
young families.
Right.
Well, like I said, we went through that here many, many, many years ago with the formation of Regional School District Number 1, which was the first in the state of Connecticut. And the way they got around that was every town got to keep their grammar school, but then the high school served the whole district.
Right.
So
we don't even have...
have both. We have a unified high school and
grammar school.
And grammar school.
Right.
Well, we have two high schools, actually. There's one in Berkshire Hills, and then there's Southern Berkshire.
So now they're proposing the name Southern. So we now have Southern Berkshire Regional School District, and we have Berkshire Hills. And so they are proposing that we call it Southern Berkshire Hills Regional School District. But... nobody can. It is one of many stumbling blocks. It's just the one.
Well, I think one of the stumbling blocks is that the district is large, and so the morning bus ride for some students would be quite significant.
Yeah, I think that's really the issue.
And so that has in the past has been a real issue with parents, is that they're kids would be on the bus for 2 hours a day. People have resisted that, aside from the fact that they like the fact that there's a local school district and with their local athletic teams.
Right, right.
I don't know if you can hear in the background, but FM is saying that we're out of time.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Okay. Well, we'll have more next week.
And you can find also every day, 24 hours a day, theBerkshireEdge.com. Guys, we'll speak to you next week.
Okay,
Marshall. So good to hear from you.
Right, okay,
bye.
Bye.
The
TheBerkshireEdge.com is where you can find them on the web.